If you're over the age of 50 and considering buying an annuity in the next 60 days, I have some important news for you. Don't buy an annuity until you understand the pros and cons of annuities. A free book to help you maximize your retirement income from television host and three-time author Josh Melberg has been released. This book reveals little-known truths about annuity strategies in simple-to-understand terms. Grab a pen right now, because we are about to offer you this free book that unlocks the five little-known secrets we believe baby boomers and seniors should know before buying an annuity. Call 800-935-0752 now, and you'll receive a free copy of Josh Melberg's book, Next Gen Annuity Strategies Revealed. As a bonus, we'll also send you a copy of The Number One Mistakes Retirees Are Making With Their Investments Today, and a free DVD on how you can get up to 33% more income in retirement. Call 800-935-0752. That's 800-935-0752. Employees of J.D. Melberg Financial have the appropriate licenses for the products they offer.
From the campus of Yale University, this is Business Talk with Jim Campbell, nationally syndicated across the country on the Biz Talk Radio Network, and coming to you from our flagship stations, Yale Radio WYBC and 1490 AM WGCH Greenwich. All talk and all business, 60 minutes of radio with leading figures from the world of business along with the business of politics and sports. The Amazon of black market drug sales, the dark web, and the most wanted man on the web, Ross Ulbricht, a.k.a. Dread Pirate Roberts, the epic hunt for the criminal mastermind behind the Silk Road, and then we'll hear from the mother of Ross, Ross now serving a life sentence without parole. All of that tonight on Business Talk with Jim Campbell. First up, Nick Bolton is a special correspondent for Vanity Fair, where he writes about politics, technology, business, and culture. He's a columnist for the New York Times for about a decade, and he wrote the New York Times bestseller Hatching Twitter. This new book is American Kingpin, the epic hunt for the criminal mastermind behind the Silk Road. Welcome, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
It's like an astounding Silicon Valley growth story with the most unsuspecting person. Before we dive in, explain to people what the dark web is, how we would find it, and then the brilliance between the browser and the bitcoins for keeping everything off the grid.
So the dark web was originally built actually by the U.S. government to enable people who were serving overseas to be able to, you know, go on the internet and email their friends and family and even, you know, people within the government without having to worry about being tracked by, let's say you were in Iraq, by the Iraqi government or whatever it was. It was put out there publicly so you could download it using what's called the Tor web browser. And it quickly became used for nefarious purposes. It was built several years ago. Today, 95% of things that take place through Tor, which is how you access the dark web, are, you know, drug and gun and websites and things like that.
Could you or I easily download this browser and get on it?
Oh, and anyone can download it. Yeah, it's free. There's no rules around it. You just download Tor, and then you go to Google and Google how to get on these websites, and you'll find a dozen of them. And you know, when the Silk Road started, which is the website that my book is about, there was not any of these things really existed. The dark web was mainly kind of just for people who had, you know, issues believing that the government was tracking them or who were using it for real purposes to, you know, in the intended way it was supposed to be used. When the Silk Road was started, you could then use it to buy drugs and other things.
All right. Tell us the scope of Silk Road and what was built there.
So the Silk Road originally started off, it was the guy who built it was Ross Ulbricht, and he was a really sweet kid from Austin, Texas, and he always kind of had this philosophy, a very libertarian philosophy, that the government shouldn't really be able to tell people what they can and cannot do with themselves and their lives and their bodies and so on. And so he looked at the current drug situation where, you know, millions of people have been arrested and tens of hundreds of thousands thrown in jail for buying and selling drugs or doing drugs. And often what ends up happening is that these people get in trouble for buying very mild things like marijuana and magic mushrooms. And so he decided to build a website that you could go and anonymously buy and sell these things.
He wrote a lot of the code himself, and it's almost like an Amazon or an eBay. It's pretty complex stuff. But he wasn't a coder, right? He was a physics major. How did he pull that off?
He was incredibly smart, incredibly kind. He was the kid that would stop and help old ladies across the street mid-sentence. And he was able to kind of, you know, take on any new project and figure out how to do it. You know, he decided when he was building the website that he was, you know, he figured out how to do the front end and the back end code. The design, the whole system of using Bitcoin, which is the currency that you could use to buy and sell the drugs. Really complicated stuff. I mean, I write in the book that if it were a startup in Silicon Valley, it probably would have needed $10 million in funding and a team of a dozen people and Ross did it all himself. And then at the same time, you know, just to kind of, there's another example of how clever he was, he needed what he called product for his site to prove that it would work. And so he went and grew magic mushrooms. And from all the people I've spoken to that have grown magic mushrooms at scale, it is not an easy thing to do. And yet he was able to do that too.
This libertarianism, which sort of underlies his idealism here, and yet what results is, bringing in drugs 100 times the level of power with fentanyl, et cetera. And this is a sweet guy. You've called him that several times. How does this balance out?
Well, I think what happened is in the same way that, you know, one analogy to it is that on the internet, on social media, for example, on Twitter, people sometimes say things that are really vicious and things that they would never say to someone in real life. And it's because there's no empathy on the internet. You can't see how the things that you do and say and the way you act is affecting other people. And I think that parallels to the Silk Road and the website that he built. I think that, you know, in his mind, he thought that he was making the world a better and safer place.
Did his ambition run amok, or how did he justify this stuff in his head? And I know there's people who say, well, people get killed on Craigslist and McDonald's kills people, you know, so he's just building this platform.
Well, there's a very justifiable response that a lot of people have in this kind of libertarian philosophy, which is, I didn't make you take those drugs, you know, so it's not my fault. And I think that that's kind of a bit of a justification. It's, you know, that Silicon Valley is known for this too, with things like Uber. You know, the CEO of Uber, yeah, Travis Kalanick, used to say the same exact things about people losing their jobs. He's like, well, it's not my fault. And I think, you know, Ross said the same thing. The one thing that I do think happened with Ross over time was that there were two things that happened. One is he kind of became drunk on power. He was running this website that was doing tens of millions of dollars in transactions. He was making millions and millions of dollars in profits. And in his mind, he was doing what he'd set out to do, which was making it safer for people to buy and sell drugs. And so there were those two things that I think came together. And he believed, he truly believed, and he'd written this to people he worked with and mentioned it to others, that one day he would prove to the world that he could legalize drugs using the internet and that he would be able to take his mask off one day and say he was the guy that did it.
And we'll get later to some of those values seem to go by the wayside when he authorized murder for hire and things like that, allegedly. And in terms of money, he had something like $80 million in bitcoins when they finally got caught. Tell us, what is Dread Pirate Roberts and his mentor, Variety Jones? And then the next segment, we'll get into the thriller of the whole deal.
So as with any good startup that starts to do well, you need to hire people to help build the products and manage the services and so on. And Ross was no different. And so he hired a small group of people at first that kind of grew over time, and some of them would manage the servers and some of them would build new code for new features, and others would deal with customer complaints just like eBay or Craigslist did. And one guy who he brought on was a guy who went by the name Variety Jones, became kind of like his conciliaire, and he offered guidance. He was very clever, very funny. They spoke, you know, for hours and hours upon time on using a thing called TorChat, which is also an anonymous chat program. And Variety Jones one day came up with an idea that Ross should rename himself the Dread Pirate Roberts. And from the Princess Bride movie. And the concept was that eventually when Ross wanted to pass along the website, if he ever wanted to, he could, the person who took it over could remain Vampire Roberts and no one would ever know who started it, who finished it, and so on and so forth. And it actually became the crux of Ross's defense when he was finally caught a few years later.
But this guy, Variety Jones, unlike Ross, was not a sweet guy, right? This is a really bad dude.
Well, it's interesting. I don't know if anyone is a sweet guy or a bad dude in the whole thing. You know, for example, Variety Jones had no problem, you know, pushing Ross to put a hit out on one of his employees, at least what he thought he was a hit on one of his employees, because the employee had allegedly stolen $350,000 and all these other things. And so he said, you know, he started referring to him as the organ donor and pushed Ross to put a hit out on him. But at the same time, when Ross was, you know, pushing to sell more heroin on the website in bulk, Variety Jones pushed back and he had said, you know, I've seen the effects of heroin firsthand when I was in prison. And I think it's just an awful, awful drug. And so it's, you know, it's really fascinating. You had this thing that started to happen on the website that was one of the things that Ross had never anticipated in the beginning, which was you had people that were selling weed seeds and mushrooms, and then you had people that started selling guns and other weapons, and then you had the heroin people. And they all disliked each other. They all thought what the other person was doing was wrong. The weed people wanted to be nowhere near the gun guys because they were bad. And the heroin people thought the weed people were pathetic. And this is one of the things that came about. It's so funny how we all have these different views of what is right and what is wrong.
And we've set the stage now for a thriller. We'll come back and we'll talk about the hunt for Dread Pirate Roberts and the Silk Road.
Do you want to take the great shows of BizTalk Radio wherever you go? Well, now you can with the new BizTalk Radio app for iPhone and Android devices. Now all the great shows of BizTalk Radio are with you wherever you go, just an arm's reach away on your smartphone. Download today at the App Store or the Google Play Store and get the brand new BizTalk Radio app. It's biz for you wherever you go with the new BizTalk Radio app.
Do you want to fly somewhere, anywhere in the world? Smart travelers call MyFlightSearch.com for the best deals on flight tickets. Going to Manila, Bangkok, London, how about Singapore? Call MyFlightSearch.com for the lowest flight tickets available. What about a local vacation? Let's say you want to fly to Vegas, Orlando, Miami, Los Angeles, or Denver. Pick up the phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now. We have exclusive deals that you can't find anywhere else. The only way you can get these low airline prices is by calling us. We have so many low prices available, we can't possibly tell them to you right here and now. If you're flying somewhere anytime in the next 6 months and you want the lowest airline ticket prices anywhere, you owe it to yourself to save a ton of money. So pick up your cell phone and call MyFlightSearch.com right now.
Call 800-303-3398. 800-303-3398. That's 800-303-3398. Call now. 800-303-3398. 3398.
Attention hernia mesh implant surgery patients. A popular hernia surgery product has been linked to a high rate of complications and injuries. If you or a loved one had a surgery where a hernia mesh was implanted and have experienced pain, infection, adhesions, mesh migration or product rejection, needed replacement or revision surgery, or other adverse reactions, you may be entitled to substantial financial compensation. Time is limited to file a claim. Call now for your free consultation. Call 800-706-6897. 800-706-6897. This is an advertisement. Paid non-attorney spokesperson. InjuryHelpDesk.com is responsible for this advertisement. Principal office, Las Vegas, Nevada.
I owed the IRS $10,000.
The IRS garnished my wages.
They put a lien on my house.
The IRS is the most powerful collection agency in the world. They do not give up until you pay.
I couldn't sleep. We were being audited. I called Tax Solutions Now, and a great big weight was lifted off my shoulders.
I called Tax Solutions Now, and they got the IRS off my back.
Tax Solutions Now had my wage garnishment lifted in 48 hours.
Tax Solutions Now can get you help. Our agents know the rules can stop the pain and get you the best deal. We connect you with a team of former IRS agents and tax professionals who will get the IRS off your back.
We saved our home and overcame the most powerful collection agency in the world.
Call Tax Solutions now. Time is running out.
Call 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166. 800-979-0166.
This alert just came in. This special announcement is for business owners and leaders of organizations who've been waiting for the right time to build. General Steel has made it impossible to wait any longer with rock-bottom prices that could save you thousands. That's right, General Steel, America's leader in pre-engineered structures, is offering buildings at prices you will never see again. Don't miss these prices. A 50 by 100 for under $30,000. You heard right. That's 5,000 square feet under $30,000. Manufacturers, if you need a larger building, try a 100 by 100 commercial building for $129,000. You can't afford to rent with these prices. Imagine a 70 by 100 foot church building for under $69,000. With the economy improving and interest rates still at historic lows, you can't afford to wait.
Call 800-605-5370. 800-605-5370. Call 800-605-5370.
Biz Talk Radio.
We're back with investigative tech reporter Nick Belton. And the hunt for this guy sort of started over one pink pill that a young kid who worked for ICE, the Customs and Enforcement Agency. Start to take us through the epic hunt and how law enforcement got their arms around this thing.
It's interesting because it started for almost by accident, I got to visit when I was reporting the book. I got to visit all the different places that the mail comes into the United States, and it comes on regular planes sometimes, and it's packed next to your luggage and so on a flight from Amsterdam, and I got to follow. There was one pink pill that kind of started the whole thing, and it was this agent. His name was Jared Reagan, and he worked for the Department of Homeland Security, and he was a newbie. He'd only been on the job a couple of months, and they found him, and another guy found a pink pill that came in a package from Amsterdam and turned out to be ecstasy. And to really put it in perspective, this tiny pink pill, the mail facilities where the mail is sorted, they're multiple football field sizes big, and they're stacked. They're almost like they look like the end scene of the Raiders of the Lost Ark. And they find this pill and they go to the person's house who had ordered it. And that was how they first learned about the Silk Road, and they almost didn't believe it was real. It was like, how can anyone be so brazen to start a website where you can buy and sell drugs on the internet? And so this started one aspect of the investigation, and then there were other people all over the country from other departments, IRS, the Department of Homeland Security, the DEA, FBI, that all started their own separate cases. And what's so dramatic about the story, and even if you know how it ends, it means nothing, because the drama really is in the telling of the way these things all kind of come together and the competition between these law enforcement agencies. And some of them even start working for the Silk Road and turn bad.
The agencies don't play all that well together, do they?
No, they do not. And I think part of that is people get into this because they want to make a difference, but they also want to make a name for themselves. And so So they all want to make sure that they're the one that breaks the case and they're the one that gets the reward and the promotion and so on. And then there are other aspects of it where for people who are not necessarily interested in the reward and the promotion, but they are mired in the government bureaucracy that exists. And I think that that this was a perfect example of that. The DEA had never done a drug case where they'd used Bitcoin or busted someone on the internet. And the FBI had never done drug cases for people selling drugs on the internet, even though they'd done cybersecurity and so on. And they really all started kind of competing with each other, and it got a little vicious. And at one point, there's this DEA agent and a Secret Service agent who start stealing Bitcoins during the investigation and almost get away with a couple million dollars worth of money.
I got a sense, too, that's interesting. A lot of these things were sort of hunches, like Jared's work. Normally, nobody in drug enforcement looks for one pill, and they kind of smell these things out. The IRS guy, Gary Alford, was kind of interesting. He used kind of a Son of Sam, you know, which is he got caught by a parking picket on his car. It was a kind of looking for cyber prints, right?
Yeah, it's interesting. They all took different approaches, and you know, one of the things that I've tried to do with all of the books that I've written, I did this with my last book on Twitter, mm-hmm. is that in the hindsight in an investigation or in a story or a creation, there's usually one person that ends up taking the credit for everything, and this is no different with this. And the reality is that they all contributed, even the bad guys. to the investigation, and without everyone doing what they had done, they never would have caught Ross at the keyboard. You know, Jared went and worked undercover for Ross on the website. Gary Alford found this clue that led back to him from the early days of the creation of the site. The FBI agents found the server. There's all these different things that happen that come together in this very tense and dramatic moment in the book. But it is really interesting that that they all kind of came to it from a completely different approach, and those approaches all kind of came together in essentially a perfect storm to solve the case.
So how does Ross get to the stage where he's either so stressed or anxiety-ridden that a sweet guy from Texas can authorize cold-blooded murders that he thought were actually happening?
I think that there's, you know, it's the same kind of mentality. And, look, I can't speak for exactly what was going through his mind, but mm-hmm. from the research I've done and the chat logs I looked at that he was a part of and the diary entries and so on, the best way I kind of can see it is that, you know, when Steve Jobs ran Apple, there was an insane demand for the iPhone. And at the same time, Google was making its phone, its Android devices, and they were ramping up to compete with Apple. And so Steve Jobs knew that they needed to make sure as many people could get access to a phone as quickly as possible, because that was going to be the future of their business for decades. And people get locked into these platforms. And as a result, in the phone plants in China, people were committing suicide because they were working 16, 17, 18-hour days. Yeah. And I think that Apple's thought with this was, okay, well, this is just a sacrifice we have to make in business. You know, it sucks. But this is just what we have to do if we're going to win. And I think Ross had the same mentality, which was, you know, I don't want to do this to people, but they are threatening the business that I have built and this institution, which is potentially going to have one of the biggest impacts on the world in decades. And if someone has to die as a result, then that's just the decision I have to make. And I think he struggled with it. It was incredibly difficult, but at the end of the day, I think he felt himself justified in it.
Now, he at one point looked at building a backup plan if he had to escape. He went to a place called Dominica, which I'd never heard of. Do you think that if he had taken a measure like that, or are there other measures that he could have taken where he wouldn't have gotten caught, or is this just inevitable that you're going to get surrounded eventually?
Well, I think that the only way you don't get caught is if you stop. It's hard for them to catch you as you're doing it. You know, there was Gary Alford, one of the things he did was he had read a paper on Bitcoin, and he remembered there was a segment in the paper about this thing called the gambler's ruin. And the gambler's ruin is essentially a thought process that eventually, if you continue to gamble, the house is going to win.
Yeah.
And that was the philosophy that he had. Eventually, if Ross continued to run this website, the house was going to win. And for Ross, if he literally would have walked away 3 weeks earlier, closed his computer and said, "I want nothing more to do with it," he would have gotten away with tens of millions of dollars, which today at Bitcoin's valuation would have been probably worth close to $2 billion. But he just thought he was invincible, and I think that was the that was his downfall.
Yeah.
It was hubris.
We're down to the last minute or so. Describe the arrest, because it's incredibly thrilling when they get him literally red-handed.
Well, they knew that this FBI agent Chris Tarbell had done a number of cybersecurity cases, and he knew that you needed the evidence on the person's computer to be able to catch them. and to try them. And so they needed to ensure that they got Ross on his computer. And it was an incredible tense moment in a public library in San Francisco where some agents posed and faked a fight. And they managed to get him just in time.
And it was really incredible because normally they would have wanted, the FBI would have forced a SWAT team, which would have ensured he didn't get caught with it live logged in. We'll look at the cyber forensics for catching this dark web criminal in our final segment with Nick next.
Are you ready to leave your corporate job behind and be your own boss? Have you ever dreamed of owning a business? Do you have $50,000 or more sitting around in a 401k? If you answered yes, it's time to invest in yourself by buying or starting a business or franchise. IRS code allows you to use money in a 401k to invest in a business with absolutely no penalties or taxes. At Guidant Financial, we've helped more than 11,000 entrepreneurs invest $3 billion in retirement assets into the small businesses and franchises of their dreams. So if you've got $50,000 or more in a 401k and you're looking for a way to start a business, call Guidant Financial now for free information and to learn more. Operators are standing by for your call. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. 800-570-6630. That's 800-570-6630.
Hi, I'm Joan London. If you're worried about your parent or loved one living alone, like I was, and you want reliable senior care information, then call A Place for Mom, the nation's largest senior living referral service.
Finding an apartment that was on the courtyard with the view of the trees, the view of the ducks, the stream, the creek, all of that, that was what I needed.
You'll get free information on assisted living, Alzheimer's care, nursing homes, even important financial information. Here's the number.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
A Place for Mom is a free service, and you can trust them to help you. So if you're struggling to find reliable senior living information, there's a place for answers, A Place for Mom.
To speak to a local senior living advisor, call A Place for Mom at 800-506-0320. That's 800-506-0320.
Tired of paying outrageous prices for Viagra? Well, we have great news for you. Now you can finally get Viagra at huge discounts. Healthy Man allows you to save up to $500 on Viagra. Why pay U.S. pharmacy prices of $15 per pill or more when you can get Viagra for less than $3 a pill? Call today and get 40 Viagra pills for only $99. This can cost as much as $600 at your local pharmacy. You can't afford not to call us. If you want Viagra at the lowest prices, never pay $15 a pill pharmacy prices again. Get Viagra for less than $3 a pill. Call 1-800-521-9579 today and save up to $500 and get 40 pills for just $99. Healthy Man is fast, easy, and affordable. Operators are waiting at 1-800-521-9579 to take your call right now. Call 1-800-521-9579. That's 1-800-521-9579. Again, 1-800-521-9579.
If you're suffering from hearing loss, stay tuned for a special offer from the makers of Listen Clear, a revolutionary hearing aid breakthrough designed by top audio engineers to fit your ear almost invisibly. Right now, you can try Listen Clear hearing aids absolutely free for 45 days. You can also qualify for free shipping and free batteries for life. Listen Clear hearing aids are so lightweight and comfortable, you can wear them all day long. They're practically invisible too, so others won't even notice you're wearing them. And the best part is, you'll be able to hear almost everything, everywhere. So do something about your hearing loss. Call Listen Clear now to get started with your 45-day risk-free hearing aid trial. This special offer won't be available for long, so call Listen Clear now.
800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. 800-716-4650. We're here 24 hours a day to help. That's 800-716-4650.
Have you written a book and want to get it published? Then call Page Publishing ASAP. We're looking for authors of all types of books. And unlike most publishers, Page Publishing will take the time to review each and every book submitted to us. And we'll give you our feedback. And if we like what we read, we will get your book into bookstores and for sale online at Amazon, the Apple iTunes Store, Barnes & Noble, and other outlets. We handle everything. editing, cover design, copyright protection, printing, publicity, and distribution. So if you've written a novel, children's book, cookbook, inspirational work, poetry, or a biography and want to get it published, call Page Publishing now for your free author submission kit. Your road to fame and fortune could very well start with this simple phone call.
888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. 888-785-0618. That's 888-785-0618.
Biz Talk Radio.
And we're back with Nick Bilton. He's the author of American Kingpin, The Epic Hunt for the Criminal Mastermind Behind the Silk Road. We'll look at the forensics now. First off, how confident are you and how do you know there's not more than one Dread Pirate Roberts?
I couldn't be more confident about anything on planet or Earth that Ross Ulbricht was the only Dread Pirate Roberts. You know, I have been doing investigative journalism for more than almost 15 years. You know, when I write a book, I spend thousands of hours. I have researchers that work with me. We get every single solitary minute detail that we can. And then we, almost in the same way that FBI agents put a case together, we unravel it in the opposite direction. And one of the things we did was we took all of Ross's social media feeds. You got to understand Ross for many years. The majority of his day on the internet, whether he was logged into the Silk Road as a Dread Pirate Roberts, chatting with his employees, or writing diary entries on his computer, or blog posts as the Dread Pirate Roberts on the website. And from the personal side, from Ross's side, he communicate while he was doing all those things. He would bounce back and forth and communicate with his friends on social media and through email and so on and so forth. And one of the things we did was we got all of that information. We took all of his social feeds, videos he liked and shared, photos from his phone, chat, literally 2.1 million words of chat logs.
Wow.
And we put everything together in his entire Facebook feed with photos and status updates and comments. We put it all together in a database. And what we could do with all those different things is we could – and then we took evidence from the trial – which was a 3.5-week trial with thousands and thousands of pages of evidence. And what we could do is we could put the database together and we could look at where the Dread Pirate Roberts was on a certain day at a certain time and what he was doing and look at what Ross was doing. And whenever Ross traveled, the Dread Pirate Roberts was said he was offline because he was traveling. And whenever Ross went on a camping trip one weekend, he was away for the whole weekend, he told and I have photos from the camping trip and GPS location of where he was and all these things. He told his employees to watch the site. He met a girl when he was on the camping trip and they fell in love. And when he came back, he was the Dread Pirate Roberts. He was telling the employees that he met this girl on his camping trip and they fell in love. And one of the defense points was that he was framed by someone else and that right. They had put these chat logs and things on his computer. It would take, I'm not even over exaggerating, thousands of people, thousands of hours over months to be able to manipulate his chat logs to match his social media feed in the way that they did. And so to me, there's just no doubt.
You say, I think you found 100 instances where you could coordinate the Wi-Fi movements of at the same time, both these guys, right, Dredd, the alter ego and Ulbricht.
And then there's an example when he goes to Dominica, he's offline for I have the flight itinerary because that was used in evidence. And the flight itinerary shows he took three planes and he literally logged on from different locations and different time zones in those connection points every single time he goes to Dominica. He goes to Dominica, he tries to get a citizenship when he needs to go on the run. When he comes back to San Francisco, he's under a pseudonym telling people he's got a different name. He's, paying for things in cash. His girlfriend at the time knew what was going on for a while. One of his friends did. There's so much overwhelming evidence.
A big, strong forensic evidence, two things is that, number one, his defense is he started it and then it got so out of control he let it go. So he was no longer involved. But when the FBI did that, surrounded him and picked him up, he was live on all three of the admin sites of Silk Road, right?
Yeah, and I think one of the problems was he he didn't have a very good defense. I think he hired a lawyer who was great with some really incredible cases before, but he wasn't a lawyer who was familiar with tech, and I think that that played against him. And I, the other thing that was frustrating for me, and I think for a lot of people I've spoken to, is that, you know, Ross, you know, talked about how he was willing to get the death penalty over these beliefs, over the fact that drugs should be legal and these libertarian views. And I admire that. I think he had something he truly believed in, and he wanted to make a difference in the world in the way he saw. But when he was caught, he took the complete opposite approach and denied that he had anything to do with it and so on and so forth. And I think that, he probably would have had a better result if he would have taken the stand and said, I did this. I believe the drug system is screwed up. And how would the prosecution have been able to argue that?
And so you think it was a fundamental mistake not to take a 10-year plea deal, 10 to life, that he was offered, because he's been given life without parole plus 40 more, right? Something like that?
Oh, yeah. I think it's probably one of his biggest regrets, I would imagine. I don't know. I can't speak for exactly what his biggest regret is, but I'm sure it's one of them. He was offered a deal, and he, you know, back to that hubris, he believed he could beat the case. And the prosecution said to him, look, you know, this is it. And he, at first, he was going to take the deal, from what I heard, and then he wasn't, and so on and so forth. And I get the fear of asking for 10 to life, but I guarantee if Ross Ulbricht, a white kid from Austin, Texas, with a master's degree, would have said, hey, look, I started this thing. I'm really sorry. It got so out of control. I didn't even know what was going on. He would have gotten 10 years, maybe even less. But he believed he could beat the case.
The two thumb drives were found by his bed as well, which contained the Bitcoin assets he had or whatever. Is there any way those could have been fudged or set up?
Well, I mean, who's setting them up? Is it the FBI?
It's a good question.
So let's just take the approach that he was set up, right? Mm-hmm. So you have to, first of all, you have to create 2.1 million words of chat logs and videos and files and documents about the Silk Road and all these things. You have to get them onto his computer without him knowing. Someone who is incredibly smart would notice if all these things showed up on his computer. You have to get diary entries that knew things about Ross that no one else knew, that referenced friends and girlfriends and things like that. You had to make sure every timestamp from every photo that you had never even seen, that had never even been posted on the internet, matched up perfectly with all those chat logs. And then at the same time, not only did you have to set him up to be caught in the library with his hands logged in onto this computer and being like, oh my God, how did that happen? And then you have to sneak into his house and put two thumb drives on his side of his bedside table, and that had the entire Silk Road and all those Bitcoins, tens of millions of dollars, which you're going to just throw away to set this guy up. It makes no sense whatsoever.
Let me ask you this, too. This seemed very incriminating to me, too. He partitioned his laptop so that it had separate directories for files for Silk Road and for his personal Ross Ulbricht. I mean, isn't that pretty incriminating?
Well, there's people that partition their laptop all the time, especially if you're a programmer. So the thing that was incriminating was the fact that when he was logged in, he had his laptop partitioned, and on one side of it, he did all the Ross Ulbricht stuff, like go on Facebook and email his friends and so on and so forth. And then on the other side, he would do the Silk Road stuff. And one of the things that, like, there are these moments you just couldn't make up. And for example, he had a diary that he used to put on his computer that he'd always kept a diary, Ross Ulbricht. And he in the diary entry, he mentions that he got poison ivy from climbing in a tree. And he had also emailed his girlfriend, and I have the email, saying that he got poison ivy. But he didn't say how when he told her. And he had told friends, and he even told the FBI agent, because the FBI agent was like, hey, well, how'd you get the poison ivy? Just being friendly with him. And he had said he climbed up into a tree to get a garbage bag and he got poison ivy. And so there's all these different, the triumvants of all these different things that no one outside of that little world would have known. Mm-hmm. So it's just impossible to say that anyone else was running that site except him.
Could the feds technically take down the Tor web browser?
I mean, they could maybe put out some sort of update that would that would kill the software, but it's, I don't think there's any way of putting the genie back in the bottle.
Forever.
And even if they did, people would come up with something else.
Last thing, the libertarian philosophy that drove his idealism, do you see that and what happened with him, that it can be a real danger?
One of the things that I did when I was doing the reporting was I spoke to folks that adhere to the same philosophy, and I spoke to people he went to college with who would follow that same philosophy. And I was fascinated to understand how he was able to kind of justify the actions that he had taken. And even with the so-called murders, and there's, you know, they pointed me to articles that Ross had read and even papers he'd written and so on that did point to those justifications. And I think that, it's one of the things that's so frustrating about Silicon Valley is the fact that it's the same philosophy. You know, Peter Thiel, who helped get Donald Trump into the White House, has that philosophy. It's not my fault whatever happens after I do my thing, as long as my thing is clean. And I think it's an incredibly destructive, selfish way of living, and I just don't necessarily
and,
agree
and
with
there's
that.
Billions of dollars behind the Silicon Valley libertarian, so it is very interesting.
Yep.
It's been the book is thrilling, page turner, as well as all the brilliance of putting together the dark web and bitcoins to go out and sell drugs like a kingpin. Thanks to Nick Bilton, and the book is in fact called American Kingpin, The Epic Hunt for the Criminal Mastermind Behind the Silk Road. And next we will talk to Russ Ulbricht's mom. She'll join us.
Due to an upturn in the economy, Main Street Business Loans has pre-approved the release of millions of dollars in small business funding. Your business may already be pre-approved to receive up to $250,000. We've sent out millions of pre-approval letters. We see the economy growing, and our underwriters believe now is the time to invest in your business so you can grow faster and make more money. And we're prepared to give you up to $250,000 to do it. Your funds can be available in 5 days. There are no application fees, no annual fees, just quick access to up to $250,000. If your business did not receive your approval letter to get up to $250,000, call Main Street Business Loans Approval Desk now.
800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, 800-430-7570, that's 800-430-7570.
If you're 85 or younger, would you like peace of mind and comfort for your family? We're Final Expense Direct with an urgent message for you. The average funeral today costs over $8,000, but the most you'll get from government benefits is $255. How will your family pay the difference? We can help. Our senior plans start as low as just a dollar a day and pay up to $30,000 for a funeral and other final expenses. Peace of mind is easy. There's no medical exam. You'll have lifetime coverage, and your plan can't be canceled as long as you pay your premiums. Call now for free information about our senior plans. Answer a few simple questions and receive approval right on the phone. Plus, call right now and we'll give you a discount prescription card for free. Call 800-595-6619. That's 800-595-6619. Again, 800-595-6619.
How old are you? 25, 35, 50, or older? If you have pain, we can help. Do your knees hurt?
Ow!
Let me ask you again. Are your knees killing you?
Oh, yeah. Are they ever?
What about your back? When you bend over, does it feel like this? How about when you get out of bed in the morning? If you're like me, your knees and back feel like this.
Oh, that hurts.
I found a company called the Pain Relief Hotline. They specialize in ways to treat your knee, back, and neck pain without surgery or taking medications. The good news is if you have insurance, you may have little or no cost or out-of-pocket expense. I've used them. It works. Call the Pain Relief Hotline now for free information. 800-303-4607. 800-303-4607. Call now. 800-303-4607. That's 800-303-4607.
4607.
Here's George Foreman with InventHelp.
Hi, I'm George Foreman. Do you have an idea for a new product or invention? People ask me all the time, George, how do I get my idea in front of companies? How do I get a patent? What do I do next? Do you have the same questions? I'll tell you like I'll tell them all. Call my friends at InventHelp.
Call InventHelp today for free information. InventHelp has been helping inventors for more than 30 years and has sales offices nationwide. InventHelp can submit your invention to companies who are interested in receiving new ideas. If you have an idea and want to try to patent it and submit it to companies, you should call InventHelp today for free information.
Listen, I can't guarantee a company will be interested in your idea, but I believe every inventor deserves the opportunity to step into the ring and take their best shot. Put InventHelp in your corner.
To get your free inventor's information, call 1-800-351-1453. That's 1-800-351-1453. Again, 1-800-351-1453.
Are you struggling with addiction or alcohol problems? If you're depressed, drinking, and using drugs, you may need help. And the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of substance abuse.
I knew I could get myself out of this. I just needed some hope and some help.
I took the first step to recovery when I made the call.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
I feel like I'm losing control. I'm afraid I'll lose my job or even my family.
Call now for hope and help with proven, gentle recovery programs.
I never thought that I could be somebody who didn't drink and use drugs.
I'm in recovery, getting the help I need.
Call the Addiction Hope and Helpline now for a free assessment with someone who cares. Call 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533. 800-547-6533.
Biz Talk Radio.
And now we're joined by Ross Ulbricht's mother, Lynn Ulbricht. And she has the website freeross.org, where donations go 100% towards the appeals of his case. As we've said, he's doing a life sentence without the possibility of parole. She joins us, in fact, en route to visit him in prison. Start off by just telling us, how's he doing, Lynn?
Well, Ross is one of these very positive people by nature. And so he, from the very beginning, he's been intentionally positive, intentionally contributed to other inmates, you know, led classes, helped them get their high school diploma, helped them get into college remotely. And he just tries to stay constructive and positive. So within the context of being in prison, which is very difficult, very hard, he's doing, you know, as well as can be expected.
Okay.
Better than I would say most people might. He's really doing a good job.
You believe he's innocent to some extent. Tell us what you mean. Obviously, from Nick's book and the court case, he was caught red-handed, logged in. The thumb drives had all the bitcoins, a lot of chat and diary, all that point to his pretty heavy involvement. Tell us what you think.
Well, he was downloading the Colbert Report on an open-source network in the library. He was not running Silk Road in the library. And I think that's important, and I've had crypto security people tell me it is because open source networks, well, I know in this hotel I'm in now, I got a virtual private network because I know how easily it's invaded. There were many, much of the laptop protocol was not followed, and that was even testified to by a government agent at trial, that he did not follow the guidelines. And there's many questions about the laptop investigation, the ability to tamper with things, the laptop crash in the middle. So I'm very suspect of exactly what's on that laptop. I think that should be examined at least.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
It's obviously a tragic, tragic thing for your family. Everybody, including Nick Bilton, says this was a really sweet, kind kid. Big believer in liberty.
He doesn't know Ross, but yeah, it is true. He is.
Big libertarian. Mm-hmm. Did his ambition, his drive to change the world run amok here? I mean, obviously there's a lot of, issues about, fentanyl and more powerful drugs and overdoses and things like that that resulted from trying to make drugs safer on this online platform. What happened to him?
Okay, first of all, he has said, and I believe, that his intention in coming up with this idea on the internet was not to make drugs safer, although I think that's great if it did. Mm-hmm. He was all about a free market. Yes, he was a libertarian idealist in the Ron Paul campaign, got caught up and interested in Austrian economics and voluntary interaction. So, yeah, an idealist in his 20s, mid-20s. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I think that, you know, his idealism, like many young people, led him. As regards the overdoses that were mentioned, those came up in not in trial, never proven. And, in fact, we had a forensic pathologist say you couldn't possibly even say they were from Silk Road. This was at the sentencing and actually helped prejudice the sentencing to give him life. It wasn't even proven. And there's a lot of things in this trial and the sentencing that should concern us all because, really, uncharged crimes, which was also part of it, mm-hmm. should not be part of our sentencing. Things are supposed to be brought to trial and put before a jury.
Yes, in fact.
And that was not happening. In some cases, the things that drove the sentence. And now, but even, and I don't believe it's all true, as I told you, even if it were, a double life sentence plus 40 years when there's all nonviolent charges with no prior record and no history of violence is a draconian sentence.
Yeah, in fact,
it's ridiculous.
It would seem to me that even if Ross was 100% guilty of everything he was said, the sentence is just brutal. You're working on a lot of big issues, in fact, through freeross.org.
Yes.
You talk about dangerous precedents and Fourth Amendment searches that were too broad. What do you mean by dangerous precedents?
Well, there's been many precedents in this case that were put us all in danger again. One of them is the use of digital evidence, which was almost 100% what they used against Ross, so easily tampered with, so easily deleted, changed, planted. And other courts have thrown it out. And this court said, no, it's all reliable. It's not reliable. And in fact, post-trial, the defense team discovered in the government's own evidence proof of tampering. It's, to me, frightening on many levels. And there's other things, like you mentioned, the general warrants, you know, and there were also unwarranted pen trap and trace methods used without a warrant that should have a warrant. And these are all, you know, things that can be argued, but with a general warrant, this was something that we fought the Revolutionary War for, basically, that you can't go into someone's house and rummage through it from attic to basement to see what you can find. And yet, in the digital age, they're saying they can do that with our digital houses, with our laptops or computers. And this is a big question for the digital age, because the government is saying it's not protected.
He was trying to make a point, obviously, that the drug war had failed. Do you think that he got his sentence in part took in other considerations like that, his libertarianism, other things that prosecutorial misconduct relating out of that?
Again, Ross said he started the site to have people experience a truly free market. There were some restrictions, by the way, things that the administration felt created victims, such as there was no child pornography. Mick Bilton mentions selling body parts. I don't think that was ever done. I don't know where that came from, but I assume if it did, it was voluntary. But in any case, there was no child pornography, no stolen property, no violent services. Otherwise, it's a pretty unregulated market, which I think is why so many drugs were sold, mostly marijuana. In any case, Ross wasn't that interested in drugs. That's not wasn't his motivation. And I believe that. That's what he told me. And I believe that. He was a libertarian. He just wanted a free market, vendor and buyer driven, whatever people wanted to do. So, it's like they've made him, Ross, taking the brunt of the whole thing. And that's not right.
Does he have further appeals? I mean, is the Supreme Court the...
I'm digressing. So, they denied it. We have petitioned them to rehear it. Based on the fact, one big point is that the judge used Ross's libertarian political philosophy in the sentencing to saying it was a dangerous philosophy, and that was one of the things that bolstered the life sentence, which is against the First Amendment. And also that the warrants were general warrants, and then the pen traps didn't have a warrant. So saying, please reconsider, basically it's a petition saying to the Second Circuit, please reconsider based on this.
Okay,
now,
so it's
I'm told they very rarely do that. If they deny it, then the next step in the system is to petition the Supreme Court. Any of these things, it's hard. It's a hard, it gets steeper, you know, ability to make it happen.
Very hard. Mm-hmm. Okay. And you've really devoted your life, obviously, to this. Lynn Ulbricht, you can go to freeross.org if you'd like. You could make all 100% of the donations go towards his appeals. You can even use Bitcoins, ironically. And Lynn's agreed to stay with us. We're going to do another segment with her, so we appreciate that. Thanks to Lynn Ulbrich. Thanks to Nick Bilton. Thanks to our national audience for listening, and we'll see everybody next Sunday.
The opinions you hear on Biz Talk Radio are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect those of this station, Biz Talk Radio, its management, or advertisers. The information on Biz Talk Radio does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions about Biz Talk Radio, contact us at 817-274-1609 or at biztalkradio.com.
Biz Talk Radio.